Maine's Economic Outlook for 2021. Crafting an economic forecast is never the easiest thing to do, but how to do it this year? It all depends on how quickly life gets back to some semblance of normal. Already, the economic recovery is showing itself to be uneven, hurting and helping different segments of the population differently. Young people, people of color, people with children at home are among the hardest hit. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will look at 2021 in Maine through the lens used by economists, factoring in demographics, consumer trends, real estate transfers, retail sales, and more. How long will it take for Maine to recover from the pandemic? And when it does, can the state be stronger than before? If so, what will it take? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. Welcome to Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. The pandemic had a devastating impact on the Maine economy in 2020. Today, we're going to discuss just where we are and the economic outlook for Maine in the year ahead. My guest, Amanda Rector, who is the Maine State Economist, and Andrew Crawley, who is Assistant Professor at the University of Maine in the School of Economics. We invite your questions and comments. Email talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Welcome back to both of you. Amanda, I'm going to start with you. Before we start looking at the forecast for the year ahead, tell us about where we are. Give me an assessment. Just generally, we know so many jobs were lost. Many small businesses had to close. What is the big picture as we enter 2021?
Yeah, it definitely has been a challenging year on a few different levels. Thinking back to where we were January of 2020, we actually looked like we were in pretty good shape. I mean, you know, unemployment was low, employment had reached record levels, we were seeing wage and income growth, and then everything really ground to a screeching halt, and we lost a tremendous number of jobs from February through April. We have regained, you know, about half of those back. Some sectors have been doing better than others, as you would imagine, thinking back over the course of the year and in the circumstances of a pandemic. Those jobs that require a lot of face-to-face contact, jobs in the service sector, particularly leisure and hospitality, those were some of the hardest hit sectors because you just can't engage in the same level of activity. And so those were some of the sectors that had been very hard hit, remain sort of furthest from their pre-pandemic levels. And unfortunately, given the fact of Maine's climate, winter tends to be a slow time for those sectors anyway. So we have recently seen unemployment starting to follow its usual upwards trend over the winter. I think that, you know, the course of the pandemic in the coming months is going to be a really key factor in what the rest of the winter and the spring end up looking like.
Yeah, Andrew, how does the picture here in Maine compare with the picture nationally?
I think that we look pretty similar to other parts of the U.S. and kind of what has been happening across the nation. And I think as economists, we're used to traditional recessions where you saw a peak and then a slowdown, and there were all these signs that begin to tell the economy was moving the other way. Well, here we just saw the shutdown of an economy, and that meant that the usual signs that we pick up, that we look for, really weren't there. And as Amanda pointed out, I think that the initial damage was done, particularly in terms of the job losses during that first period. And I think the U.S., across the U.S., we saw that. Then you see pockets of change where the pandemic really took hold, like New York hurt at a very particular time. And then we saw as closures filtered through in the Midwest and then out West. So although pockets did vary across the U.S., I think Maine looks very similar to that. And I would add that usually as economists, we also look for those long-run indicators. And we're really still waiting for those indicators to come out, because in normal times, we would pick up a recession after it's happened. We know we've been in recession because of what has happened over the last few quarters. But I really think that the signs of how the kind of damage that's been done, I think we're really going to be able to tell how bad this was across the coming months. And I think it presents a challenge to all of us who are kind of focusing on economy to try and answer like where we are at. I think it's very difficult to tell right now.
Yeah, Andrew, just as we're in a surge in the pandemic itself, I understand that economists consider us in a second dip of this recession.
Yeah, and I think when we were on the show previously discussing the pandemic and kind of the effects that it was having, at the time, I remember we were asked to kind of predict where we were at, and I used the term a W-type recession. I think people were talking initially about V's, this quick bounce back of the economy, and my head always said that we were more like a W, where you would see a bounce back initially, because that's just simply the percentage change, to then a fall again, which was as Amanda was mentioning, the reality that other job losses are seasonal or cyclical in nature, and they begin to mount up. So I think we're in that W-type recession. So I think we're still going to see declines in certain areas before we begin to see a real pickup again.
Let's hope it's one W and not a series of W's. Amanda, go ahead.
I'll throw another letter in there, which is K. And that's one of the things that, because of the nature of some of the job losses and some of the other disparate impacts, you know, women and people of color have been impacted more strongly, in part because of the types of jobs they hold, but also in part because of childcare situations. We've seen this divergence where higher income, middle income, jobs that easily transition to remote work have recovered much faster than service sector jobs, lower income jobs, some of these other jobs. So we've seen this K-shaped recovery sort of taking place too, in addition to possibly this W. So we've got a whole alphabet soup going on.
And Amanda, it strikes me that that this is maybe hard for somebody like you to be assessing and forecasting, because so many things are different from because this is a pandemic and not a recession brought on by economic factors, really, but by health, public health. And one example I'm thinking about just off the top of my head is that obviously we've seen performing arts just really hit hard. So people are not buying tickets to performances, and therefore nobody's collecting sales tax on those. Yet I know that my local paint store has been booming and my rug store has been booming as people have been working from home and looking around their homes and thinking, oh my gosh, I've got to fix this place up. So it's a little harder, isn't it, to parse who's doing well and who's not doing well?
It is. It's so different from, I mean, every recession is a little bit different, but this is just wildly different in so many ways. And certainly a lot of sectors, you know, usually construction and manufacturing get hit really hard in a recession. And this time construction has been doing great. I mean, yeah, we've all been stuck at home and looking around our house and thinking to ourselves, oh my gosh, I've really got to get XYZ fixed. And then contributing to that, of course, is as we've seen home sales increase, usually a home sale, there's some component of construction work that goes along with that, some renovations or refurbishment that happens. A lot of it really has been also just the sense of physical safety that goes along with engaging in certain activities. And so certainly, you know, it's hard to gauge what is a seasonal effect versus people still aren't comfortable going into restaurants in person. it's making things even more complicated than they always are.
So let's pivot now and actually talk about 2021 and what you all expect. We've been touching on it a little bit. Andrew, let's say that the projections that the most of the American public will be vaccinated by summer hold up, and that the vaccination indeed helps us tiptoe back into life that's somewhat normal. What do you expect to see this next year? Do you expect to see the economy surge back, or do you expect it to be slow?
I think that's the $56 million question. I think what we saw initially happen in the economy before, the early warning signs for us were actually people's behavior started to alter. And if you look at retail sales, we started to see retail sales fall, sales in hospitality industry fall before any of the stay-at-home orders came into effect. And I think it's about giving that, Amanda touched on this, about giving people having confidence again to go back to those traditional activities. And I think until we get that behavioral response in order, it's difficult to see that the economy is going to roar ahead. I think there's also some underlying constraints that now exist in the economy. The US has taken on vast amounts of debt over this period. And I think economists have argued whether that's good or bad, but I think most mainstream economists would argue we need liquidity, we need the system to keep going. And so that debt was it wasn't good, but it allowed us to at least keep the economy ticking by. I think longer run, there are going to be questions about how we can continue to spend at a particular level. And if any constraints around that expenditure come in, that would tamp down my projections for like a quick bounce back. But on the real economy, like people spending in stores, I really think it's the behavioral component. If people are vaccinated and people feel safe, I think you will start to see a bounce back in that area. But I would say that the two are probably seeing the numbers of retail sales is one thing, but actually seeing people respond is going to be another.
Amanda, thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think so much of what we are going to be dependent on is just human behavior, and do consumers feel confident? It's one thing to have the vaccination, you know, get it out there, get it through everyone. But if people don't trust it, then that's not going to be enough. We need to have everybody vaccinated, and we need to have everybody believing that that vaccination has been effective so that they are able to continue to re-engage with normal life and economic activity. I think the other piece of it is making sure that we're able to continue to support individuals and businesses, small businesses, particularly that have been hard hit in some of those leisure and hospitality sectors, continue to support them to get to the point where everybody is re-engaging. And so certainly in the early months and weeks, the CARES Act and federal supports were incredibly helpful in keeping people going forward, able to pay their bills and engage in spending and some economic activity. And I think making sure that we can continue to build that bridge until we get to more normal activities is going to be a really important piece going forward.
Well, we've talked a little bit about the federal government now, and I want to ask you all three different things are happening. One, many Americans just got a $600 stimulus check. The Biden administration has come out with its plan for another $1,400 for people. And then also, my understanding is that the next round of PPP is, right here. People can start applying today, and it officially opens next Tuesday. So I'm wondering, Amanda, what you think the impact of both the personal stimulus checks and the new round of PPP funding for businesses, what kind of impact that will have on Maine?
Yeah, I think the timing is good because it, particularly the $600 check, came as some of the original provisions of the CARES Act were expiring. Some of those have now been extended, but that helped bridge any potential gap if people had seen their unemployment benefits expire. Now those have been extended again, but there are and additional payments continuing through that. But this, I think the $600 one in particular was a good bridge on the timing. I think, again, it's going to be a few months before we're through sort of the thick of the winter months and these higher cases that we've seen and wider spread of COVID, and before we can really get a more full vaccination schedule here proceeded through. So I think that that's going to be, you know, clearly that still has to go through Congress, but I think that that's another place that there could be some help in terms of the building that bridge to get us through. And similarly, I think that another round of PPP is helpful, even if businesses aren't necessarily sort of ready to grab hold today and get it. I think just the knowing that it's there helps to support some of the business confidence, knowing that they haven't been left hanging. They're getting some support as well. So I think having support on both of those fronts has been helpful.
Andrew, how important do you believe this current round of help coming from the federal government is?
I don't want to make this boring, but I very much agree with Amanda. I think what Amanda highlighted is really what most economists are arguing, that there are a lot of people who were hurting, and I think that these provisions, the extension of some of those provisions, particularly around unemployment, I think are essential. I think that a lot of people were talking about this benefit cliff where that these transfer payments might have been cut off. And I think that would have been absolutely devastating on a social level for the individuals involved, but it would have been catastrophic for the economy in general. I think any of these provisions that help us ride through these next few months are important. I'd also wonder, though, there's some evidence that suggests some of these payments that were going out, a lot of people, a lot of money was not actually being spent during this period or wasn't being spent locally. It was being spent in national or bigger chains. And I think some of the arguments being put forward are that if that's the case, we need to then make sure that small local businesses aren't being left out. And as Amanda points out, having these other protection schemes, not saying that businesses have to use them, but just acknowledging their presence means that they might make those extra decisions to keep going. And some of this, it might be about businesses, particularly in a Maine context, where we have a lot of seasonal businesses which open on a certain date. If bills have been stacking up and there are concerns, it's easier for those businesses to say, look, I'm going to pull down the shutters, I'm done. But if those provisions are there, it means they might have that confidence to hold out those extra months to start to see a tourist season again or start to see more economic activity happen. Overall, any of these provisions that we're talking about, they have to go through Congress, they have to be decided upon, but then it's about seeing them filter through the actual real economy. I think a lot of the time, seeing the number is great, but actually seeing it being spent is a different matter. And we need to make sure those things are all tied up.
We're talking about the state's economic outlook and forecasting it in the midst of a pandemic. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, some of your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Hudson University, committed to leading the way through graduate study in business, counseling, and nursing to strengthen Maine's future. Hudson.edu.
Next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour, I'll talk with reporter Luke Mogelson about the violence at the Capitol and its dangerous aftermath for America. The convulsive end of the Trump years and what it portends for the Biden presidency. That's next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour.
And And you can hear that broadcast Saturday afternoon at 2 p.m. here on Maine Public Radio. There'll be a Maine CDC briefing on the coronavirus with Dr. Shaw this afternoon at 2. And beginning next week, the Maine CDC will move its briefings to a Tuesday-Thursday schedule. That new schedule will start on Tuesday, January 19th. For today's live update on the Maine CDC briefing, tune in to Maine Public Radio, Maine Public Television, MainePublic.org, or the Maine Public Facebook page at 2 o'clock this afternoon. And all CDC briefings are archived on our website for later on-demand viewing, and you can find the link on the television drop-down at MainePublic.org.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, a look at Maine's economic outlook for 2021. My guests, Amanda Rector, who is the Maine State Economist, and Andrew Crawley, Assistant Professor at the University of Maine School of Economics. Share your comments and questions via email, a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling. Post a comment to our Facebook page or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Marty Grohman, who's calling in. Marty, head of E2 Tech. Hi, Marty. Go ahead.
Hey, Jennifer. Great show. You know, I think in our sector at E2 Tech, there's definitely reason for optimism, but we've also got some work to do.
Tell me what you're thinking about 2021.
Well, I polled about 30 of our E2 Tech member companies, and actually every single one of them was hiring from the administrative assistant level to the principal engineer level. And our members do things like PFAS or forever chemical cleanup and renewable energy development. So those are sectors that are kind of not slowing down. We're seeing just really strong job growth. I think the worry is that we don't want it to be just kind of a roller coaster where this kind of fades away. I think we're in a position to kind of be the key to help lead the comeback, and we kind of hope to keep it that way.
All right. Well, Marty, thanks for calling in. Marty Grohman from E2 Tech on the line with us now. Yellow Light Breen, who is president and CEO of the Maine Development Foundation. Yellow, welcome back.
Good morning. Thanks.
I understand the Maine Development Foundation just released the annual measures of growth, which tracks a large set of metrics. You're looking at long-term forecasting for the Maine economy. How has the pandemic affected that?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think it's really actually magnified exponentially the challenges and assets that we knew were already there in a lot of really interesting ways. One member of the governor's economic recovery committee said the pandemic changes everything. And I immediately thought to myself, that's not true. The issues about talent in our workforce, the issues about innovation, and the issues about infrastructure in terms of things like childcare and broadband, the pandemic's magnified those, not shifted them. And I think the insights about those are going to be more important than ever. You know, the lowest skilled workers are in the occupations that were hit the hardest, as Andy and Amanda have discussed. High income jobs are going up. Inequalities in our workforce with, you know, in terms of gender, race and age were magnified by the pandemic. So the measures of growth insights, we think, are more apropos than ever. And I would say probably the single biggest one, you know, on the one hand, quality of life remains a huge calling card. That flight to safety, that flight to community that we're seeing in Maine as a result of that. But innovation is our Achilles heel. And we've seen that for years. It's a red flag in the measures of growth. We saw innovation be our friend in terms of the ability of Puritan Medical Products and IDEX and Jackson Lab and so many other partners to help us respond to the pandemic. Innovation has to be our path forward for real growth as well.
Well, let me ask you this. Early on, you just mentioned two things that are really difficult problems for Maine, and that's not having widespread high-speed broadband, and then also childcare, not having enough high-quality childcare in Maine. Do you have any hope, Yellow Light, and do you see any indication that this pandemic has been a catalyst for change in either of those areas?
I think so. I think broadband, you know, I think we're always on that cusp with broadband of, is this a consumer good or is it an economic necessity? And I think the fact that so many of us were stuck working from home and schooling from home just kind of tipped everybody over to the recognition that it's absolutely non-negotiable now. And we have to supplement the market forces with, you know, as most astute public support as we can. And on childcare, I think we were kind of realizing that childcare is one of the things that enables people to be in the workforce or not. And with the pandemic, working families with kids were disproportionately affected, and especially women in the workforce. So we've lost a couple of percent of people who just can't even participate in the workforce because they don't have access to childcare. And I would add, one of the most important things is normally in a recession, we see a ton of people geared up to go back to school. They're unemployed, underemployed. They take the opportunity, and we usually try to create supports to enable them to reskill and retrain. We're not seeing that nearly enough now. Why? Part is safety with just the health angle, but a bunch of it is the childcare angle too. And so we're actually not seeing what we would normally hope to see, which is the people who need it the most going back to school to get ready for the future.
Mm. Finally, Yellow Light, I want to ask you if you believe that Maine can come out of this pandemic in even stronger, that this may help fix some of the problems in the Maine economy, or is that kind of magical thinking? Do you think that this is setting us back for a number of years?
Well, it's probably a little bit of both. It's going to be a long ways out of this, I think. The last recession took us a long time to recover. And, you know, there'll be the stickiness like Andy was talking about in terms of confidence to reinvest and start growing again. And some parts of the economy have just changed for good. Some parts of retail will never come back the way they were because we just all got used to doing it a different way. And that's going to be a tough sort of pivot. But I think about it this way. You know, Maine did a good job managing through the worst of this. We weren't hit as hard as some places. If we can stay focused on just grinding out some progress in the future of bioproducts, in the future of aquaculture, in the future of, you know, the tech services that are here, if we can build off this disruption by inching our way ahead while others are taking big steps backward, I actually do feel really optimistic that when things reopen globally, that we can really be positioned to make up some ground.
Well, Yellow Light, thank you so much for giving us a call today. Yellow Light Breen is the president and CEO of the Maine Development Foundation. We'll go to Cape Elizabeth and Sam. Hi, Sam. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to ask the economists on today, well, they had mentioned earlier the deficit spending and kind of the velocity of money and stuff like that. And I wanted to know, from an economic perspective, how big of a concern is the national debt? And is it more of a political talking point at this point? A lot of the deficit hawks are out now talking about that we can't afford this. They're comparing the national debt to a credit card that we're just putting a balance on for future generations. And it seems like that's inaccurate and also just kind of a scapegoat to not offer immediate assistance. So I wanted to know, from an economic perspective, kind of what the, if there's any type of consensus on the implications of the deficit in a rising debt, especially in an emergency like this.
I'll take that to, I'll send that to you, Andrew Crawley.
An easy one. I think the honest truth is there is no consensus. And I think Sam's point is that a lot of economists have been debating this for a very long time. There's a school of thought, modern monetary theory, MMT, which has received a lot of popular press over the last 2 years, that argues that we shouldn't be thinking about debt the same way a household does, because a household can't print its own money. The U.S. can. And so I think that there are different schools of thoughts here. One argument I would put forward, it's not just about taking on debt for debt's sake. It's about taking on debt to do something. If you use the debt that you are generating or creating money, which in turn is producing debt, but to then build infrastructure, to improve childcare situations, to increase broadband access, those investments are long-run macroeconomic positive conditions that would generate greater growth. So I think it's about using debt wisely rather than just fearing it.
Amanda, thoughts?
Yeah, I think the only other piece that I would add to that is that you have to think about the trade-off in terms of if you don't take on additional debt to do some of the supports for individuals and businesses and governments and some of the infrastructure work and some of those other things, what are you going to end up doing to the economy if you don't do those? And is that going to be worse than having to deal with higher debt in the longer term? And I think particularly in the current circumstances, I think there are a lot more downsides to not doing anything than sort of the risks of additional debt.
All right. Well, Sam, thanks so much for your call. We're going on now to Gary Vogel. Gary Vogel is the past president of the Maine Real Estate and Development Association. And Gary, I want to talk to you about real estate. We've been hearing about the hot real estate market, not just in the Portland area, but all over Maine. People from out of state snapping up houses in Maine during the pandemic. Do you think that that's going to continue to happen in the year ahead?
Good morning, Jennifer, and great to talk to you again. So, you know, the real estate market has been, you know, affected, obviously, just like so many other parts of our economy. And we've all heard about the, you know, the on the residential side, how much of an impact there has been with people, you know, essentially working remotely and coming to Maine. And I do think that that's going to continue. I mean, like in so many other areas, you know, the pandemic hasn't necessarily changed the dynamics, but it has accelerated trends that were occurring, you know, all along. So on the residential real estate side, you know, Maine has benefited by people coming to Maine who could work remotely. And that was happening before the pandemic. But certainly, you know, now it's accelerated to a huge degree. And, you know, I suspect that that's going to continue. You know, on the sort of corollary of that, on the in commercial and office real estate, you know, many offices are really rethinking what their real estate needs are since they've got so many, you know, workers working remotely, and I think that's, you know, offices are trying to figure out if they have a lease coming due. You know, do they continue it? Do they need more space or less space? Do they reconfigure their office environments so that there isn't as much, you know, open space and areas that, you know, that can, where people can, you know, communicate the virus? People were going to these very open office environments, and a lot of that is being rethought right now. And I'm not sure that, you know, people necessarily know the answers, but it is having a big impact, you know, upon real estate. And, you know, each of the different sectors is affected, you know, differently. Obviously, hospitality and retail has been hurt, you know, in a big way. And hopefully that will, you know, come back and there'll be enough economic support through, you know, through the government programs to keep those businesses, you know, surviving until business comes back.
Gary, in your view, how does real estate and these sales and these changes contribute to Maine's economy in the long run?
Well, I mean, real estate has always been a big driver of Maine's economy. We're both a natural resource base, you know, environment, and we're also, you know, vacation land. And I don't think those things are going to change by any means. So I think that, you know, real estate is going to continue to have to be a big driver for Maine's economy and a lot of jobs that are, you know, that have traditionally been involved in real estate or supporting real estate. And I think that that's, you know, going to continue. You know, what we're seeing now in terms of all the construction activity from people remodeling their homes or offices to, you know, to benefit from or to take advantage of the, you know, different work environments, I expect that that's going to continue. And, you know, and And it's also exacerbating some of the same kind of shortages and cost things that we've had, where there aren't enough workers in the trades. And so a lot of those same issues are, continuing, but maybe being exacerbated, by what's going on with the change in some of the demands during the pandemic.
Gary, thanks so much for calling in. That's Gary Vogel, the past president of the Maine Real Estate and Development Association. We are going to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. If you would like to join the conversation, our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Bristol Seafood of Maine. Dedicated to bringing restaurant-quality meals to your kitchen with My Fish Dish, found in the freezer at your local Hannaford.
I'm Peter O'Dowd. At the end of another unprecedented week in Washington, Donald Trump is the first president to ever be impeached twice. A Senate trial won't be held until after Joe Biden takes office, and Biden is focused on his agenda to slow the pandemic. We'll cover it all on our weekly political roundtable next time on Here and Now.
Here and Now, upcoming shortly at 12 noon today here on Maine Public Radio.
The pandemic has thrown the real estate market for a big, big loop.
In Tahoe, we just had more demand come out of the woodwork than we've ever seen before.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, three real estate agents, on what their markets are looking like next time on Marketplace.
And you can hear Marketplace this evening at 6:30 here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on our program, Maine's Economic Outlook in the Year Ahead. My guest, Amanda Rector, who is the Maine State Economist, and Andrew Crawley, Assistant Professor of Economics at UMaine Orono. Join our conversation. 1-800-399-3566 is the number. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Amanda, I want to follow up really quickly on something that struck me during my conversation with Gary from the Realtors Association. And my question is this. We know that as more and more people from out of state are buying homes in Maine and prices are going up, homes are becoming less affordable for many people in Maine. We also know that many of these people who are working from home with jobs that are out of state are making salaries that are higher than Maine salaries. And right now, this is really a problem. And I'm wondering if you see this as bringing pressure to raise wages in Maine. Do you see that 5-10 years from now, Maine will be closer to our New England neighbors, for example, in wages and salaries?
Gosh, that's a good question. I think certainly we've been looking at the home sales, and we've been seeing increased sales to people from out of state. I think part of the question is that we don't know yet is exactly who is making up that sales. Are they people, young families maybe moving here who intend to stay for the foreseeable future and sort of create their new long-term lives here in the state? That could have some really good benefits in terms of helping to address some of the workforce issues that have been troubling the state for a long time and are certainly going to continue to be an issue in the future without some increased migration. Maybe it's retirees who are deciding to buy a second home here and maybe not necessarily engage in work, but come and spend more money here when they're here. And I think that the challenge of home affordability is one that has already been an issue before all of this even started in certain parts of the state. And with the increased sales in some of the more rural parts of the state where we weren't necessarily seeing home affordability be an issue. Maybe that now is becoming an issue. And so I think that's very troubling. On the wage side, you know, there are so many moving parts to that question. Maybe Andy wants to tackle that a little bit more. I would say that, you know, some of it is really going to be dependent on the types of jobs that we have here relative to the types of jobs that are in, you know, Massachusetts and Connecticut, for example.
Andrew?
Yeah, and I think Amanda's point about the types of job are interesting because prior to the pandemic, I think most of us were in the consensus that the economy was doing pretty well. And we had issues recruiting people to positions, even when wages were being pushed up. They were trying to recruit workers, for example, in retail establishments around the coast. And even when wages were going up, they were still struggling to recruit people. So I'm not sure if wage inflation is going to be a massive issue or positive for the economy in Maine. I think it's just going to kind of trickle on its normal path that it's been on. I would also say the composition of those households that are moving to Maine is an interesting one. We could benefit if it is those younger people who have particular skills that we have been in significant need of. And ensuring that they now want to stay and that this is now Maine is now their home is something that before the pandemic we always wanted to attract younger people into the state. But if we can now keep these people who have moved here, if this is the demographic, that would be a massive positive. I think one longer term issue, whether those other positive spillovers do occur, is for general house price inflation in the state. Because if these are people from outside who have now consumed some of those houses, we still need housing stock for those who are in the state. We still need housing stock at a certain quality. So it's ensuring that that mix begins to adjust to any new population changes that have filtered because of the pandemic.
I'm going to read a couple emails that are related, both from people in the restaurant industry. The first is from Constantino. He writes, Blue Mango Veggie Burgers lost every restaurant account in 6 states. The retail sector has gone up, but it's a numbers game. Don't have enough grocery stores to recoup the food service loss. I predict a very slow, torturous path to recovery for restaurants nationwide. And from Leslie, who's the owner of Ironbound Rest and Inn in Hancock, it will be a positive step when small hospitality businesses like mine will simply be able to settle back into our creative ways, not having to spend time going after the generous money grab by the feds, the state, and other sources. Until there is responsible public and vaccinated population, this is the way it is going to be. Amanda.
Yeah, you know, I my heart goes out to people in the restaurant and lodging and general sort of leisure and hospitality industries with all the arts institutions and everything else, because they have just, through no fault of their own, been really hammered by this. It's just the nature of being in a pandemic where the disease spreads through personal contact, and that's how you engage in those activities. And, you know, I think that that's where some industries and some businesses need help, because this is something that's outside of their own control. And that's where the role of federal and state and local support comes in. I think a lot of businesses, too, have tried to be very creative and innovative in trying to figure out how do you get through this time until you can, you know, get back to normal activities. Maybe you can, if you're a restaurant, maybe instead of serving people, you open up a small like pantry service and people can order some of what you would normally have been making into meals as they cook more at home. You know, I think the restaurants that have been trying to do more curbside and more outdoor dining when the weather allows, you know, I think those have been successful. Clearly, they're not going to make up all of the losses from not having a normal tourism season and normal business. But some of those things can help. But the longer we go until we get back to normal operations, it gets harder and harder the longer that stretches out.
We had a call from Peter. He had a bad phone connection, but we're going to summarize what he wanted to ask. He says he's a retired bankruptcy trustee and wanted to ask about the likely wave of consumer bankruptcies of people out of work and struggling with lack of work and lack of income over the last several months. Andrew, is that a concern of yours?
It is. I think that those of us who were keeping an eye on some of the data around this, we saw it incredibly flat last year around bankruptcy. And of course, that was artificial because a lot of the courts had stay orders, they weren't open. And so I think that there is a concern that, particularly if no additional support was to occur, I think some that bankruptcies could begin to kind of rear that trend is going to start increasing again. I would actually kind of collate this to that previous point that Amanda was making, that my heart goes out to some of these businesses that have really struggled because the nature of the business they're in means that it's very hard to maybe switch to another alternative means. The funds that are being discussed or put on the table at the moment probably are a major lifeline to those people until we start to see more vaccinations and more wider changes in public perception around safety. And until all of these pieces come together, I think the bankruptcies loom large over all of it.
I'm going to go to Lee on Facebook. He writes, can your guest comment on efforts to move people working in economic sectors hit hard, like hotels and restaurants, to where demand is high, such as retail and technical? Home Depot, HVAC, auto repair, construction, and medical, basically getting people into skilled job training to meet the need where it is. Amanda, why don't we talk about that? You know, we've talked many, many times, Main Calling, about places that there are not enough of. There are not enough construction workers. There are not enough nurses, not enough teachers. Is this an opportunity to retrain people for different industries, or is this not really the time and place for that because, one, of social distancing, and two, we're hoping that their industries will be coming back?
Well, I think there are a few things going on. I think in some cases there were needs for additional temporary types of assistance where you know, some of the companies that were doing manufacturing related to testing or PPE, where they suddenly had a huge surge of need for additional employees, but probably won't be needing that for the foreseeable future. That's one place where I think there were some efforts to try to match up people who weren't working because their sectors were essentially shut down and move them into some of those openings. Clearly, you know, there are some longer term structural issues that are going to be playing out. If there are sectors that even prior to this had been changing, you know, the face of retail more and more is online and less in person. So some of that employment had been already starting to diminish a little bit as people had been moving more sales online. If there are some of those longer trends that have been exacerbated by the pandemic, then I think that those are opportunities where we can try to do some targeted retraining. And, you know, a lot of those programs either have a lot of online components that can be done, or, you know, the all of the higher ed from all the community colleges, the private up through the university system and everybody else, they've all been trying to figure out how can they get programs to people without having to run up against the social distancing and safety precautions, and so trying to figure out how to make those work. But I think we also need to be cognizant of the fact that there are those other additional challenges related to childcare availability and some of the personal health concerns that are still stumbling blocks and challenges that we need to overcome.
All right. We'll try to squeeze in one more call. We'll go to Beattie in Camden. Hi, Beattie. Go ahead.
I'm listening to this about economic recovery and how to do it. And, of course, we want people to have work and income. But it worries me when we talk about growth, what kind of growth is it? I want to ask that we think about climate change at the same time as economic recovery, because we can make things worse, and climate change is accelerating. And if we do planning without remembering it, without even mentioning it, I always worry that we're going in the wrong direction in terms of what will happen to us. It's not
sure.
Just Maine, but it is Maine too.
Andrew Crowley.
I think it's a good point. And I'd also argue that a lot of the industries that I think most economists would argue are going to be the major growth industries in the future are areas which are cognizant of climate change and the challenges around that. And so I think possibly growth in the future is going to naturally move more towards those industries. I think that some of the older heavy construction and things where there was more pollution and more activity around climate change or issues or problems caused by it, those are not the industries that have been majorly growing over the last decade. And I think we are seeing greater structural change that implies that we are moving to these higher value-added industries.
Amanda, just a few seconds left. What are your thoughts about Beattie's comment of having an economic recovery that also takes into consideration the impact on the climate?
Yeah, I think that's really important because for Maine in particular, so much of Maine's identity is wrapped up in the environment and the good quality of life that we have here. And I completely agree that we have to be thinking about that as we recover and as we move forward, because we need to have a good, healthy economic climate to make sure that we can continue to see growth in the sectors that are a big part of Maine's economy.
Beattie, thanks for your call. That will be our last call for the hour. And thank you to our guests, Amanda Rector, Maine State Economist, and Andrew Crowley, an Assistant Professor of Economics at UMaine Orono. Today's sound engineer was George Thomas. This program will be rebroadcast tonight at 7. You can visit mainecalling.org to listen to past programs or learn more information about the topics. Our theme music was composed by Mike Jandro. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.